This episode brought to you by Beta Brand, the San Francisco-based source for crowdfunded clothing you can visit in person the next time you're in San Francisco, or stop by anytime online to shop bestsellers like dress pant yoga pants and now yoga jeans. And when you do, use the code SPIRIT20 to save 20% off anything on the site. As regular listeners to the show know, we at Spirit of 608 appreciate Beta Brand's support, their support of female entrepreneurs and women building businesses in Fest. We're big fans of the company, what they do, and we think you will be too. So check them out at betabrand.com. Spirit of 608, episode 106. You're listening to the Spirit of 608 podcast. I'm your host, Lorraine Sanders. Keep listening for stories, tips, and advice from women at the forefront of fashion, entrepreneurship, sustainability, and tech. I call it Fest, and it's the future. Hey, hey, and welcome to today's show. Thank you for opening up the podcast today and joining me for another conversation with a woman at the forefront of Fest. As you know, if you listen to the show, I love to bring women on who are making moves at the intersection of fashion, entrepreneurship, sustainability, and tech. We call it Fest. Believe it's the future of a better fashion industry. Today, I will be speaking to a badass founder who is trying to do something about the swimwear market. And, you know, God knows it needs it. I don't know about you, but just the whole thing about trying on a bathing suit and then just bathing suits in general. I don't know if you've seen that hilarious video that's been going around Facebook with the two moms that Mom So Hard is their name. Like, they're this comedian duo and comedy duo, and they have been doing the most hilarious bit about what it's like to try to buy a bathing suit today. And it's so funny. So if you haven't seen it, you got to check it out. Even if you're not a mom, it's LOL people, which I always use. And I know that's like so outdated, but I just love it. Laugh out loud. And you will. We'll put a link to that video in the show notes. But today we'll be speaking to a woman who's actually doing something serious about this. And I know you're going to love hearing what she's up to. She is Melanie Travis, the co-founder and CEO of Andy. It's a new disruptive lifestyle brand focused on one-piece swimwear for women. And what's interesting about Andy is not just that they're focused on one-piece swimwear, but how they're selling it. So they've started out with a box concept, and you order from them, you receive a selection of suits, you know the deal, you can try them on, keep what you want, send the rest back. If you buy more than one, the cost goes down, and it's a way to interact with swimwear, not have to go into a dressing room somewhere, and also a way to access a brand that is thinking about the one piece as something a lot of us would want to wear. I mean, these days, a lot of times what you encounter is a very frumpy one piece, or something that's really just made purely for athletic purposes, or you got a really skimpy two-piece. And, you know, this is something in the middle that I think a lot of women today can and will appreciate. Another thing you're going to appreciate is the media and digital marketing knowledge that Melanie brings to this conversation that's up ahead. I first sat down with her when we met at the Shop Talk conference in Las Vegas earlier in the spring, and we had this great conversation, and she was really open about how they have approached using earned media for their digital marketing, how they've grown their presence through platforms like Facebook. And I said, hey, you know, I would love it if you would come on the show and talk about this to the audience. And, you know, she could have very well been like, no, that's our strategy, not sharing it with you guys. But she was like, sure, would love to do that. And she did. And so that is very much what's up ahead. She hails from Some of the most consumer technology companies out there, Foursquare, Kickstarter, and most recently, Bark & Co. And also in the conversation that I think that you're going to get something out of, or at least think is cool, is how she still collaborates with Bark & Co. So, you know, a lot of people feel like they got to just sort of ditch their current job, go into something else. Well, listen to Melanie for an example of how you might do something differently when approaching a startup in your own world. Speaking of doing things a little differently, you will always find that going on over at, you guessed it, a fabulous episode and show sponsor, BetaBrand, BetaBrand.com, where you can always save 20% when you use the code SPIRIT20. And this week, we're talking about swimwear on the show. We all know summer is afoot, and you know what happens in summer? I'm just going to say it. I'm going to be the first to say it. Sweaty thighs. Get sweaty thighs. And BetaBrand has like basically an entire department on the site. I just can't say this without laughing because I think it's really funny, but it's also practical. They have like a whole like selection of skorts. And, you know, hey, if you thought skorts were just for little tiny kids that need to have coverage when they're on the monkey bars, no. No, skorts are for you. Skorts are for me. They're for all of us. They have them in pencil skirts and A-line skirts and kind of cool flared out skirts and all kinds of stuff. So if you are somebody that wants to ditch the annoying commingling of your thighs when the temperatures rise, head over to BetaBrand, check out what they've got, BetaBrand.com, and don't forget to save 20% with the code SPIRIT20. So now I'm really excited to get into the conversation with Melanie. We'll be talking a lot about stuff that relates to press and media, you know, which is my fave topic. If you were thinking about press and media, stick around after the conversation. We will be dropping info about a resource that you can grab, a totally free one from PressDope that will help you take action on your media outreach in 20 minutes or less a day. So that's coming up after my conversation with Melanie Travis, CEO and co-founder of Andy. Melanie, welcome to the Spirit of 608 podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you on the show. We sat down in Las Vegas at Shop Talk earlier this spring, and we had a really cool conversation. I loved learning about what you're working on, and not only what you're working on, but how you have built this company that is in its very early stages, but doing some really interesting things. So can you start us off by telling us what Andy is and how it's different from other swimwear companies out there today?
Yeah. So Andy is an e-commerce swimwear brand focused exclusively on one-piece swimwear. We offer an at-home try-on of three classic one-pieces in three timeless styles. We deliver within 24 hours, and everything is available via andyswim.com, our sleek, mobile, responsive website.
Sweet. You deliver within 24 hours? Like if I was to order today, it would show up kind of like Zappos style?
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
That's so crazy. I have lots of questions about how you're able to do that. And I just can't think of very many retailers that are e-commerce retailers that are doing that kind of turnaround time. Why is that important to you?
Yeah, so it's important for us for a few reasons. One is because we're a try before you buy model, a customer will pay a $19 deposit and then receive a kit with all the styles and colors that we offer at home. We know that purchase intent is highest when someone is browsing the website, but for us, they're not actually making the purchase at that time. And so we need to get the product to them as soon as possible while they're still in that framework of, you know, I'm shopping for a bathing suit. So that's why it's really important to get it within 24 hours. And then on top of that, we're a new brand. And so we want to make sure that we're delivering exceptional customer service, everything from the way we communicate with our customers to the speed with which they receive their package. And so far it's paying off. We're getting, you know, just amazing feedback on, especially on the speed of the delivery.
I love that. And I mean, you know, it makes perfect sense to me why you would want to sort of capture the customer in that moment of, you know, when they're feeling the most motivated to buy. And it is kind of hard when you like go and you look for something and then it doesn't come to you until, you know, God forbid, 5 days later.
Yeah, exactly.
So with swimwear in general, can you talk to me a little bit about the category? I don't think I've had anybody on the show yet who's specialized or, you know, exclusively done swimwear. What is different about this kind of product and how might it be different from another more typical apparel item that a lot of our listeners are building independent brands and they're typically like handbags or clothing, but swimwear seems to me to be a little bit different?
Yeah, I think it is. So a couple of reasons. The whole idea began from my own personal experience of having trouble finding a bathing suit with a one piece, and that the shopping experience for swimwear was so poor. And I spoke with many of my female friends and colleagues and realized I was hearing the same sort of chorus of voices that the swimwear industry is broken and it's so hard to find a one piece. So we wanted to do swim because that was the category. I mean, that was the personal experience that I had, and that was the category where I was constantly hearing from folks that it was broken, that there's a lot of white space. But our aspirations are to be greater than just a swimwear brand. Our aspirations are to be a much larger brand that offers a variety of products and services for women. And there was a thoughtful component to starting with swim, which is that it's such an intimate item, right? That the fit is so important. It like literally hugs your body. And so when you start with swim, you're not just creating these really authentic relationships with consumers where they care, they're making an intimate purchase from you. You're setting up brand loyalty that exceeds that for other product categories. And what I mean by that is when a woman purchases a bathing suit from a company, she feels like that company is making clothes that are made for her body. I mean, it's so specific to her body. And so unlike a t-shirt or something that can be loose and, you know, maybe it's a little big, a little small, it doesn't really matter. If you fit into an Andy swimsuit, you know that Andy makes clothes for your body type without a shadow of a doubt. And so as we introduce more products and services, we have created that sense of loyalty that, you know, we're there for this specific body type.
So it's kind of like if they're able to fit me into a bathing suit that I love, then I'm going to be that much quicker to trust them with an item that is not as difficult to fit.
Yeah, or any item whatsoever. I think if you bought a t-shirt from us, you wouldn't have any sense of, you know, oh, we really get your body type and we're, you know, fit, we're made to fit you well. But with swim, you will have that impression.
I love that. It's like you're choosing your product strategically in order to create the brand personality or the brand presence that you want to have in your customers' lives. That's really, really interesting.
Yeah, exactly. And the thoughtfulness about the sort of intimate and authentic relationships is equally large to the fit issue. We've been live for just a few weeks, and it's been amazing to see how customers really tell us their almost deepest, darkest secrets about their bodies, what they're ashamed of, what they love, what they want to show off, what they want to hide. And so since we do want to be this bigger brand, we value creating these relationships with consumers above anything. We do not want to be seen as some, you know, big anonymous corporation. And so we're thrilled that that's really working and that women are, you know, in us and all of that.
So why one pieces?
Well, one pieces are super hard to find. I think if you go out to any retail store that sells swim, you'll see a sea of bikinis and sometimes a measly one piece hiding in the corner. The one pieces that you do find occasionally are either super matronly, so, you know, designed for my grandmother's water aerobics class, or like just totally over designed with frills and cutouts, sometimes all on the same piece. Or there's a lot of Nikes and Speedos, but there's really no sort of classic, timeless, chic one piece. And that's what I was seeking to find. And again, as I spoke with many women, in fact, I posted a Google survey on my Facebook page and had a couple of my friends do it too, that kind of went almost viral. We had over 1,000 men fill out the survey. And the sort of aha moment we had about one pieces was that women who desire one pieces, and perhaps they also wear bikinis, but they desire one pieces, tend to be slightly more affluent, higher educated, and higher employed than women who never desire one pieces, who only wear bikinis. So that was a big moment that, you know, wow, the demographic is going to be really, you know, a powerful one.
That's super fascinating about the sort of I don't know if it's psychographics, but the demographic details of this audience. And wow, I did not know that. Okay, so you're starting out with one pieces, and say I'm a customer coming to the site for the first time, how do I end up getting this sent to me? Can you walk me through that process?
Yeah, so our goal was to make it as seamless and risk-free and easy an experience as possible. So you go to the site, you enter your typical clothing size, and the type of fabric we use is very stretchy and breathable. So while we're not one size fits all, we say we're one size fits most. So you enter your usual clothing size, extra small through extra large, which roughly corresponds to 00 through 14. And then you enter your shipping address, you enter your credit card for the $19 deposit, and boom, the box gets to you the next day. It's a very simple designed page.
So I love that it's seamless and simple and fast. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about what prompted you to start this company now. And, you know, you were at Bark & Co., which is a startup based in New York. And yep. I would imagine that, and given your history working at various different companies with ties to tech in the past, you probably could have stuck with one of those and kind of continued to climb the ranks. And I'm wondering what, you know, compelled you to go out and do this instead. Did you always think you would do your own thing?
Yeah, you know, I think so. So I've worked in tech for a long time. I started at Foursquare and then I worked at Kickstarter and most recently BarkBox, as you said. At each of these companies, I held really entrepreneurial roles where I was responsible for launching and developing business initiatives. So that sort of entrepreneurial spirit has always been there. And prior to working in tech, I actually got my MFA in film directing and I made a few short films. And it was from that experience that I learned that I have a real sort of passion and knack for conceptualizing an idea, bringing the right people to the table, and bringing a project to life. And so kind of took a U-turn from film into tech. And now finally, I think it's long overdue that I'm sort of branching out on my own and creating a brand from the ground up.
Yeah, but that's super interesting that you were doing basically, you know, business development type roles inside of other companies. Do you think that that has led you to be able to do this in a much better way?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, at these companies, I was building teams, managing my own P&L. I was basically, you know, a founder within a larger structure. And there's a lot of safety in that because, you know, if it fails, you're still getting paid. And also you're getting paid, period. But, you know, at the end of the day, I've always wanted to do my own thing. And it's just unbelievably fun, too. So I'm glad I did it.
So when you were growing up, did you have entrepreneurs around you? I mean, where do you think that you landed on the idea that you're somebody that could launch and grow a business to a successful place?
Yeah. I mean, I think you have to have a little bit of crazy in you to think that you can do it. But no, my whole family is really in the art world. But, you know, my dad is an artist and my mom is a chief curator at the Morgan, which is a museum and library in New York City. And I think that's why I thought I would just go into the arts, into filmmaking. But really, I sort of realized that while I'm good at, you know, conceptualizing an idea, I prefer doing that for creating brands rather than creating works of art. It's just, it took this real U-turn from my upbringing, which is so enmeshed in the art world. And I grew up going to the Venice Biennales and, you know, all of that. And now everyone thinks I'm this weird businessy outlier. But I think it's, I mean, as I said, it's just insanely fun. And it's really quantifiable. I think when you make a work of art, some people love it, some people hate it. It's totally subjective. And I like being able to point to numbers and saying, hey, this is a success.
You know, what's interesting is that I have had a number of guests come on the show. And when I ask them that, they say, no, there was nothing entrepreneurial in my family. I come from a family of artists and creatives. And I tend to think that there's something, I mean, a lot of artists would probably just roll over and die to hear you say this, but there's something very entrepreneurial about art and there's something very creative about business. And so, I don't know, you're another person that is sort of underscoring that thought for me. So
yeah, that's true. That's really interesting.
Okay. So when we were sitting and talking at Shop Talk, you told me, and correct me if I'm recalling this not the exact way that it is, but that Andy still is pretty closely tied to BarkBox. Do you actually share space with the company that you used to work with, or how does the relationship work these days?
Yes. So it's very closely tied right now. And I think one thing that, you know, you hear startups talk about a lot, especially on the fundraising trail, is the unfair advantages that we have. And I think our relationship with BarkBox is one of the quote unquote unfair advantages that Andy has. So we work out of BarkBox. We have a pod of desks and access to the conference rooms. And all of that is just remarkably helpful as we're growing this company. But even more importantly, I think we have access to the expertise here. And so, you know, when we're dealing with a shipping issue or return or logistics or web development, I mean, you name it, there's some of the sort of foremost experts on sending boxes across the country right here in the office. And we can just turn to them and ask how they have handled this or that situation. And that extends beyond expertise to also getting better pricing on things. So we, for example, piggybacked on the BarkBox order of boxes, and we were able to get incredibly good pricing on our boxes since BarkBox orders, you know, over 500,000 at any given time. And we're certainly moving fewer than that, but we're able to take advantage of those economies of scale as a young company. So the relationship is fruitful and it's benefiting us hugely. We also use, we fulfill out of the BarkBox offices. There's a storage room that's just sort of unused in the basement. And now it's, you know, filled with swimwear. And so all of that has just been, you know, I think one of the reasons we've been able to launch pretty quickly. We launched on April 11th, and me and my co-founder really started working on this full time in January. So that's pretty quick. I mean, of course, we were developing the suits for about a year prior to that, but on sort of nights and weekends. And then we've been sort of, you know, just excellent stewards of capital by leveraging our relationships here.
Okay. So how does that conversation go when you go to your current employer, your team, whoever you're reporting to, and you're like, so I think I need to start my own company and I would like to do it inside of your office. And also, can I have some storage space and can I get in on the box? Like, seriously, like, how does that conversation go?
Yeah, well, it goes in stages, slowly and carefully. I think the number one thing that I think is true in life generally is, of course, never burn bridges, because you never know when that can come back. We also, you know, I worked at Kickstarter prior to BarkBox and we ran a pre-order campaign. And my experience at Kickstarter was so helpful for running a successful pre-order. But yeah, when it comes to BarkBox, so, you know, I was really happy here. And everyone, the feeling was sort of mutual. But thankfully, the founders of BarkBox themselves are obviously very entrepreneurial, and they've fostered the spirit of entrepreneurship within BarkBox. And in fact, there's all these methods they have for staff of any level to come up with their own sort of dog-centric ideas. So that's something that they're very proud of. And so, you know, at a certain point, I just approached the CEO, Matt Meeker, who was also a founder of Meetup and used to run an incubator program, Dogpatch. So he has a lot of experience with this. And I told him, listen, I love what I'm doing here, but I really want to go do my own thing. And at that point, I had already done the surveying and I was starting to develop these suits. And I felt like it just wasn't going to be fair to BarkBox if I kept on trying to work full-time at BarkBox and just doing A&D on nights and weekends. And we had a really honest dialogue about it, about what the transition would look like and how realistic doing my own business would be. I was just in a really fortunate position that we had a good relationship and that BarkBox is what it is. And so he actually said, so we agreed, you know, how much longer I would spend at BarkBox full-time, how I would transition my projects and stuff. And then he said, hey, by the way, you know, I know it's really hard to start something. We have extra room. If you want to just use a desk, you can. And it really started that way. And I left BarkBox on a Friday, had a big going away party. And on Monday, I was right back, but working for my own company, which was pretty funny. And then from there, just kept up the relationship, kept the founders in the loop of what I was working on and got them excited about the idea as well. And so as I started bringing on more people, now we're a full-time team of three, they just kept sort of clearing desks for us to use and always make friends with the right people. And the facilities folks here are excited about A&D. And so at a certain point, someone was like, hey, you know, there's an unused storage space. And that just kind of happened totally serendipitously. And certainly never had a conversation with the CEO about it, but now it's filled with bathing suits.
Well, I love that you're willing to share the sort of in the weeds piece of how this happened, because you know, I think a lot of people who are sitting in jobs and they know that, you know, there's something else that they want to do. A lot of times they think, or the traditional kind of old school way of thinking about it is, okay, well, I've got to leave my current thing entirely and go do this totally other separate thing. And what you're pointing out is a much more on trend, so to speak, way of thinking about growing a business, which is, you know, hey, maybe I don't need to completely throw out everything I've been doing. Maybe there's some way to shift and adjust and to use what I've had around me to grow something new. That's truly what you want to do with your next phase of your career. So that's just very cool.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, to that end, I think, you know, I only took the plunge to go full time once I had developed a sense of market traction, once I had done the pre-order, once I had done the surveying. And so it wasn't just a total break and then something totally new. I was able to, I mean, I think nights and weekends are key for any entrepreneur in the beginning.
Well, so you're very early on with A&D. I mean, as you said, you launched in early April, after you had been designing and working on the business for about a year, but you actually opened it up in April. And, you know, as an early stage founder and somebody growing a business, there's so much that comes at you. There's so much that you have to do. And it seems like you've had a really great response to the product and to building an audience. And I'm wondering how you've chosen to prioritize what's important at this really early stage of business. Do you have a way of thinking about that helps you keep on track with certain things and not become overwhelmed with all the possibilities that are out there day to day?
Yeah, that's a tough one. That's probably one of the hardest parts of starting a company. But thankfully, again, since I'm sort of surrounded by successful founders, they've helped a lot to really guide me towards prioritizing the right things. And then sort of in the weeds, my team and I use Asana and Trello and a lot of those systems. And we very early established KPIs, which might be be a little unusual for such an, I mean, we weren't live, we didn't have anything. We were like, let's come up with KPIs. But I knew that if we had them and we regularly track every 3 weeks how we're performing against our KPIs, and we have columns and a board on Asana for, you know, what projects we're working on that contribute to what KPI. And if you find yourself working on a project that doesn't ladder up to a certain KPI, then you just don't work on it, or you sort of move that to the bottom of the list. And so that's a very sort of technical way that we're making sure that we're working on things that are high priority and that will really move the business forward.
And to clarify, so what is a KPI?
KPI is a key performance indicator, and we have them across marketing, product, across delivery times. We sort of established what the key success metrics would be for Andy and then drew up some KPIs around those. And then our task lists always fall under those success metrics.
So you're using numbers and metrics to actually help stay on track. So you're not, it's not just like a gut feeling or the team discussing something and making a call. You've got all of those things in place so that when you go back and look at it, does it help you make tough decisions? I mean, does it make the tough decisions easier sometimes?
Oh, totally. Yeah. You know, I think one of the things I spend most of the day doing is just making decisions. And the sort of funny anecdote offshoot of that is that now when we go to lunch or whatever, I am totally incapable of deciding what to eat for lunch or for dinner. You get so bogged down with making decisions, you just can't do it when it's not related to the business anymore. But having those, you know, very clearly delineated success metrics, KPIs, and then the tasks under those makes the decision making a lot easier throughout the day.
It's so funny because you are the second person in about the space of a week to say that very thing. That another founder was interviewing Shanlin Ma of Zola, was saying that she also has that, you know, decision fatigue, because there's so many in the day, but then on the weekend, if you go to a restaurant, you're like, I don't care. Just bring me, just bring me some food. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that's so funny.
So when we were chatting earlier this year in person, you know, you were telling me about some of the media coverage you've gotten, and, you know, we're big nerds about media coverage and how people have amplified their brands through earned media, and then also a combination of earned and paid media. And you have this really interesting strategy that you sort of broke down for me. So that was one thing that I was hoping that you would be willing to bring into the conversation today, because I think a lot of people listening are going to get a lot out of hearing how you've approached this.
Yeah, for sure. So our strategy is really to lean into PR and to sort of fill the funnel with qualified leads. And I'll get into that in a second. But one thing that I've experienced at my previous companies is a sort of back and forth on the value of PR. And I think a mistake that folks sometimes make is trying to ascribe direct ROI to PR. So an article comes out and you try to see how many conversions are off that article, and then you measure the value of that from that. For us, we're not even really looking at that. I mean, sure, we'll see how many people bought from an article, but that's not what's important to us. We're using PR to fill the funnel with qualified leads. So people will read an article and go to our website, and we know that they're sort of interest level is higher than a random person on the internet who goes to our website because they read this article about swimsuit shopping and then they went to our website with the basis of knowledge of what we were about. And then we retarget them as they go about their day on the internet through Facebook or, you know, Google AdWords and so on and so forth. And because our funnel is just full of qualified leads, because we're really leaning into PR, so we've gotten a ton of press, which has been amazing. We have just thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of hits constantly on our website. And not all those people are buying, of course. But since we're retargeting those qualified leads, it makes our CAC, or our customer acquisition cost, much lower, because we're targeting the right people. And so our CAC is right around $25, which is excellent. Our average revenue per customer is $115. So it's a healthy business within 3 weeks. And I think when we spoke, that was sort of my hypothesis, and it's certainly proving true.
Okay. So I want to go back in to ask about a couple of things that you said. One, you said that you think sometimes businesses go down a wrong path or they're thinking about the wrong thing when they're trying to ascribe a certain ROI to a particular press mention and looking at the conversions and saying that like how many sales came through, how much money you generated from that specific article is the value of that press mention. You're saying that there actually is a different kind of value, or I guess I'm curious why you think that is maybe not the best way to think about it every time.
Yeah, well, I think if you just, you know, put all your marketing spend in Facebook or whatever, obviously Facebook is a great marketing vehicle, but, you know, you might be hitting, and you can start to target audiences, but, you know, you don't know if you're hitting a woman who already has 50 bathing suits and isn't shopping for one, or is so uninterested in swimwear shopping, or, you know, someone's dad who's using, you know, someone else's Facebook account. And so when you're only hitting the people who have visited your site from a press piece, those people are interested in your product. Obviously, not all of them are going to buy, but they're certainly more interested than a random person you may just target because it's a woman who's, you know, 35 years old on Facebook. And so that's where for us the real value lies in filling the top of our funnel with just really qualified leads.
Well, and it sounds like you're saying there's a lot more value to a mention than the conversions on that particular mention, that there's this whole sort of long tail value situation that happens after the fact if you're actually doing something like what you're doing and trying to capture that through retargeting.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm sure it's different for every business. I mean, there's a few other things. One is obviously as a brand new swimwear brand, we need to be sort of validated by press that people respect. So that's obviously one thing. We're a real company. We're not just, you know, three women working out of BarkBox. And so that's really proving to validate the business. And then let's see, I just lost the other point I was going to make about that.
It's helpful for validation. And I mean, imagine it gives people a lot of confidence in what you're doing. You know, the thing that struck me though, is you got a lot of the media attention so early on. I mean, a lot of times media people will be very hesitant to cover new brands until they can see, you know, what the reception is from the audience, or they can see that it's going to be a success. So they feel comfortable recommending it to their audience. And I know you worked with a great PR agency to do a lot of the press at the beginning. I mean, any thoughts about anything you can tell listeners about how you ended up getting the mentions that you got, just, you know, so that you would have this great source of leads for the retargeting that you're doing?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think a big part of that has been our model that's pretty new and different. So it's not just another bathing suit company. We're doing this whole, you know, try before you buy risk-free experience, calling it the at-home changing room. And there's just no one offering that in swim right now. And so by being a category first, that's appealing to press. And when we were developing the concept for the business, you know, we started with the product and wanted to make, you know, a better one piece, but then started thinking about, okay, there are a lot of bathing suit companies out there. And even though it's really hard to find the type of one piece we're making, how can we further differentiate ourselves? And that's when we, to appeal to press and customers and everything, and that's when we developed the try before you buy model. We're not the first to do it. I think, you know, Trunk Club, Stitch Fix, Rockets of Awesome, Jack Threads, there's also the Warby Parker model. But in swim, it's a category first. And that has been a really big point for press. And a lot of our mentions have been, or a lot of our features, we've been lucky to have full features in over a dozen sort of A-list media outlets. And they've all been about how Andy is changing the model for swimwear shopping and less about the product itself, which makes me very happy. I mean, the experience piece to me is a key part of our brand. And so that they're leaning into that is, you know, success for me.
Yeah. And you, I mean, I think you're coming out with a great story. Like, it's immediately interesting to journalists because it's different. But then also the timing was excellent in terms, I mean, and I'm sure that wasn't just by accident, but, you know, in terms of when the media would be wanting to hear from a swimwear brand that was really in, because they need all of that content for the summer ahead. Yeah. So as you have been doing this and getting those great mentions, what can you tell us about the actual process of then turning that into something that you can use as part of your paid media strategy?
Yeah. So Tess, my co-founder, really manages the marketing for Andy. And the strategy there has been to basically put paid spend behind these pieces on Facebook and then to target the readership of those outlets. So for example, Fast Company, just top of mind, we had a whole feature in Fast Company. So then Tess went and targeted Fast Company readers on Facebook, and we created an ad with a quote from the Fast Company piece and a photo from the article, but then it linked to our website, and she sent that, you know, she sort of promoted that to Fast Company readers on Facebook. And we were able to get a ton of conversion from that. And again, at a pretty low cost. We're not putting a lot of money behind these Facebook ads.
That's super fascinating. I mean, so it's like you're running an ad. It's not like it was just your product in the image and then linking to, or like having a quote from the story. It was you actually sort of put it out there so it was clear to the person seeing it that you'd been featured.
Yeah, totally. And we explored sort of two tracks. One is where we link directly to our website featuring, you know, with an ad that featured the article. And another is where we actually are just promoting the article to that constituency. And I have to say that one made me nervous because I feel like we're spending money to just promote Fast Company as opposed to ourselves. But that's actually seen a lot of conversion as well. And I think, you know, folks, they click on it. They don't necessarily know it's from a brand. They're reading an article and then they're like, oh, I'm going to go you know, buy this now. And they kind of forget that they've been advertised to. And so that creates, you know, good conversion because folks like discovery.
Oh, wow. That's just so fascinating. And so is Facebook really the key place that you can do something like this? Or have you experimented with it on any other platforms?
Facebook is the biggest one we're experimenting with right now because it's, you know, easy to target and relatively affordable if your targeting is good. We've started in Google search a little bit. We've just begun dabbling there. And I think we'll probably begin dabbling into sort of Taboola, Outbrain type things, though I know those are a little bit controversial. So we're starting to put some bones around what that strategy will look like, but we haven't landed on it yet.
Okay. Yeah. So I have no idea what either of those things are. Because like I'm coming from the media side and I'm like, You know, we traditionally are just producing the content and then what happens with it after, you're never really sure how people are using it to market. So are you able to tell us in like a sentence or two what the Taboola and Outbrain things are? Not necessarily what you're going to do with them, but just why they're on your radar.
Oh, yeah, totally. So I'm sure you've seen them. Those are basically the widgets at the bottom of articles that say, you know, stories from our partners or whatever. And they look like real press pieces, but it's paid content. It's just a vehicle for your own article. And typically a Taboola or an Taboola and Outbrain are just platforms that power those widgets. So, you know, I have a funny example. A friend of mine works at a big tech company and they were just starting out and they were putting a lot of money into Taboola and ended up, you know, on the front page of, I think, the Wall Street Journal or something.com. But it was a paid placement. It wasn't a native or organic piece of content about them. And that person's grandmother saw it and mom saw it, and everyone was like, oh my God, you were written about in the Wall Street Journal. But it was really just a paid widget, you know, that linked out to something that some, you know, intern had written about the company.
Okay. That's amazing. I love that. I mean, what do you say to your grandmother if that happens? You're like, I don't want to burst your bubble, but
yeah, I don't know how he approached it. I think he just took the compliment.
Sounds like a good approach. So when it comes to managing this process, do you guys do this all in-house?
Yeah, we do it all in-house. We're starting to talk to some digital marketing acquisition experts in, you know, e-commerce, apparently like super granular. But right now we're just doing everything and experimenting.
That's super cool. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. Is there anything else about that process that you think would be useful for somebody in an early stage business to know? Like, hey, I wish I had known this when, or whatever you do, do this or don't do this.
I guess the one piece of advice that we made a mistake early on was just being too quick to draw conclusions. And it can take a little while, especially with Facebook, to understand the data and start to see trends. And so if you turn on an ad for a week and you don't see any conversions, it's really tempting to shut it off because you feel like you're spending money for nothing. But you really need to just be patient and take the time and give it at least a month or so to run and really be able to draw conclusions about what's working and what's not.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. And I know a lot of entrepreneurs that I talk to are frustrated by Facebook in general, just because, mm-hmm. you know, it's so hard to get the organic, you know, attention and views on what they're doing, and then to be running an ad for a month and not necessarily seeing the results that you want. It's hard to stick with that, but it's good to hear that that's what, you know, somebody that's doing it well and with success would recommend. So thanks for bringing that into the convo. All right. Well, so before we get to the questions that I ask every guest at the end of the show, I'm wondering if you have any other advice for an early stage entrepreneur who's setting out to grow a business right now? Are there things that you're seeing, like trends, retail, sort of futuristic type things that you would want that person to keep in mind? I mean, based on your own experience?
Yeah, I mean, nothing that I know is rocket science or proprietary to me, but I think you see it more and more every day. One thing we talk about all the time as a team is how quickly and profoundly the consumer landscape is shifting, and how especially the millennial consumer is really seeking brands that resonate with them, value-driven, you know, creative, personal. And more and more on the other end of that spectrum, you're seeing the bigger brands that are sort of struggling, the suburban shopping malls of the world, start to snatch those up through acquisitions. And so I think, I mean, obviously I'm biased because I'm in the space, but I think it's an incredibly good time for a sort of niche e-commerce, you know, in my case, apparel or fashion-based brands, because I don't know, the market is frothy. That's a terrible thing to say. It sounds so cliche, but it's a really good time. And I think depending on what your aspirations are for the brand, it's, I don't know, that's my two cents, I guess.
So, and you're seeing that, so larger brands, because I see this happening a lot where like larger brands in a variety of different ways are saying, well, we can't do that because we're not nimble enough and fast enough and quick enough, but we can partner with or acquire or do some kind of collaborative thing with this other company and they can bring some freshness and newness and new opportunities to our customers and we can help them actually continue to grow. I mean, is that kind of what you're noticing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the partnership opportunities are so robust, but then, you know, on the financial side, the acquisition possibilities are also robust, which is, you know, an exciting prospect for a young entrepreneur.
Cool. Well, so I have questions that I ask every guest at the end of the show, and I'm excited to ask you. So do you have, are there any tech tools, apps, books, resources, or just a really great low-tech piece of advice that's helped you kick ass in your day-to-day life that you think would help our listeners kick more ass in their day-to-day lives?
Listening to this podcast is definitely one.
Thanks.
Super inspiring and helpful. And so that keeps me motivated.
I have a quick question about that. Not to put you on the spot, but do you have like an episode that's stuck in your head that you think?
Oh boy. I don't know. I'm excited to, well, I don't know if the Zola one is live yet, but when it's you not. Mentioned that.
Okay. Yeah, no, I just talked to her last week. So that's coming up. And that was a bit of a different one for us because, you know, we're not wedding focused, but I just like had to get her on because her story is so cool. And I just think she's really cool. And, you know, so she's coming on the show.
Oh, that's great. I'm excited for that one to come. No, they're all really great. You know, I listen to a lot of different podcasts. I'm sort of a podcast junkie. So sometimes
what other podcasts would you tell us to listen to? Because I'm a podcast junkie. So I mean, even if it's not business related, anything that you're really enjoying these days?
I love How I Built This on NPR. And I spent a long time listening to stories of female entrepreneurs who have raised over $1 million. But I'm not sure that that's still playing. When I checked the feed, there wasn't a new episode since December. But that one was also really inspiring for women who are going on the sort of fundraising VC trail.
What was that one?
It's called Millions.
Okay.
And it was a Forbes podcast.
So anyone listening who wants to check those out, we'll put both of those into the show notes for the episode so you can find them there. And I totally cut you off. So was there another tool, app, book, resource that you wanted to mention?
Let's see. This is a little corny and I'm a little embarrassed to admit that I read them, but the Harvard Business Review series, when I was first bringing people on to Andy, I started reading the basically like How to Be a Good Manager series. And I'd been a manager before, but it felt different because it was really my own thing this time. And those I found to be really helpful little sound bites to use. Yeah, so those books.
Cool. And I don't think that's corny at all. I think I would love to know what Harvard Business School would think if they heard themselves being described as corny. It just makes me start laughing. I don't know. I love that. I'm going to think about that for the rest of the day. So you and I have not hung out all day together, but if we did, what do you think I would end up absolutely loving about you? And what do you think would drive me insane?
Ooh, good question. Let's see. I think it's probably the same thing. I'm obsessed with my dog and some people love that and can't get enough of my dog photos and how much I'm just obsessed and adore my dog child, my doctor, as I say. But that would probably also drive you insane after a little while, all the stories and anecdotes of our lives together.
So you have to tell me what kind of dog do you have and what is her, if she's the doctor, I'm assuming she's a girl.
But she is a girl.
What is she and what is her name?
Her name is Sarah. She's a pit bull. She's a rescue, but I rescued her when she was about 6 weeks old. So and now she's 7 and a half. So we've had, you know, 7 happy years together and she's just the most beautiful pit and so kind and so sweet. And yeah, I don't know. She's everything. She's everything. And I talk to her about the business every day. She's a great listener.
That reminds me of my former doctor that I had for 10 years was a pit bull mix, and she was a rescue, and she was my journalism and reporting assistant. She would sit with me every day and provide lots of valuable insight.
Exactly.
Okay, great. So if you had to print a phrase or a motto on a t-shirt that you were going to wear for the next 7 days, what would it be?
Oh my goodness. Let's see. That would be, I don't know, get some sleep. That's definitely the one thing that's been lacking the most since Andy took off. It's pretty hard to... Yes.
What, can you give me an estimate? Like how late are you up and what time do you wake up typically?
Well, I'll zonk out around midnight just because I'm exhausted, but you know, the minute there's a slight sound, and I live in Manhattan, so there's a lot of those, or, you know, Sarah padding around, I'm up. And the problem is, as soon as you wake up when you're running a business, especially a new one, you just become flooded with thoughts and anxieties and things you need to do, and it's impossible to go back to sleep. So this morning I was up around 4:20, started sending emails around 4:25. So the sleep hours have become severely curtailed.
So if you receive an email sent at 4:20 in the morning from Melanie, she's not just boomeranging it to look like she's super productive. She's actually
yes, true.
Great. So I always close out by asking guests if you have a question you'd like to ask me, anything silly or serious, and I promise to give you an honest answer.
What has been your favorite, either your favorite story or person to talk to, or maybe that's, you know, not a fair question, but favorite, most surprising thing that's happened as you've been doing Spirit of 608?
The most surprising thing?
Yeah.
Well, so I definitely couldn't bring it down to a certain episode because I really like love talking to everybody that comes on the show. I mean, I get nervous beforehand, but I mean, really? Every single person that comes on, you know, I mean, secretly I have them on the show because I really want to talk to them. Like, I'm very interested, you know, so that's why I can't pick just one. But the most surprising thing to me is, I know what that is right off the top of my head because it surprises me all the time. You know, when I started to do the show, I was interviewing people a lot about a lot of different things that didn't really come up when I was doing reporting. So, you know, if you're covering somebody's company and you're writing a story about them, you're not always getting into sort of the mindset piece of everything and what they were thinking as they were growing a brand and how they sort of consider things. There's like a little bit of a different approach with a podcast that's sort of directed at a business audience. So I never expected, I guess what I'm trying to say is, I never had people bring up how important the mindset and mental stamina was to growing a business when I was just covering companies and brands and writing about that stuff. Because it wasn't really something that was appropriate to the conversation, I don't think. And now, because so much of what we talk about is trying to help other entrepreneurs figure out how to do these things and how to keep going and all of that, I find time and time again that the people that I talk to, like, yeah, they have a great idea. And yes, they're really smart. And, you know, they have teams and funding. And that's awesome. But they have what the unnatural sort of unfair advantages is that they have this mental stability or mindset balance, or, you know, even if it goes off the rails, sometimes they're able to pull it back and they just, like, they don't get crushed, you know? Maybe they feel crushed. I mean, I'm sure internally, you know, every entrepreneur feels like, you know, complete like shit show of a day happens on a regular basis, but like they don't stop because of it. And I just, I never realized that similar thread among entrepreneurs until I started doing this show. And it really is the thing that stands out to me the most. And the thing that I tell other founders when they're working on things and they ask me what advice I would have for them, I'm like, do whatever you can in your power to get your head in the game, you know, or figure out tactics for getting it back there when it gets out of the game, because that's what's going to help you succeed more than anything else, I think.
So, yeah, that's great. That's a really good answer.
That's my answer because I think about it often. But yeah, well, I really appreciate you coming on the show and telling us all of the things you've been working on and also just getting into the details with your strategy. It's really generous of you to bring that to the audience. If people want to keep up with you and all the great things coming out from Andy this year, what's the best way for them to follow along online?
Yeah, so I actually have a weekly newsletter where I really talk about everything we're doing week to week to build this. It's called Mel's Musings, and you can sign up via the Andy Swim website, andyswim.com.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, you too.
Done and done. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Melanie. I know I got so much out of talking to her. I think they're working on something really interesting. And, you know, I just really appreciated how cool she was about sharing everything that she did with us and really letting us get an insider's view of what it's like to be building a fashion startup today. You know, I admire what they've done with their press and media outreach, as well as their user acquisition and growth and how it's all connected. If you were thinking about your press and media outreach, which I think you should, and I don't know if I've said this on the show yet, but it's something I say to people in person and also have written in various different places. But if you think you don't have time to do it, I would challenge you to look at how much time you're spending on social media, like personal time and then also business related time. Most of us are spending hours every week trying to grow different audiences on different platforms. And then oftentimes wondering about the conversions and how much it's bringing back to your business. I mean, I hear it all the time from Fest founders. So I would challenge you just to take like 50%. And hell, if you can't take 50%, take 30%. Take a chunk of your social media time budget and give it to press and media outreach. And you know what? You don't need to hire a big expensive PR agency to do it. We have a free resource available on pressdope.com/blog. You can get it in the sidebar. It is 30 daily media tasks, and they're all meant to be done in 20 minutes or less. And in fact, many of them can be done in 10 minutes or less if you're organized and you have a media contact sheet that you update regularly. You know, just do one of them each day. Do one of them each day. You will have a month's worth of tasks, and it will vastly, dramatically improve your relationship with people in the media. It will cost you nothing. It will only take part of your social media time budget. That's what I would challenge you to do. You could grab it on pressdope.com. And as always, I really appreciate you tuning into the show and listening. And I'm not like hyping this up, but I've been really excited because, you know, we actually have doubled our listenership since last year. And it's actually growing at about 10 to 12% each month, which is pretty cool. And last month we, you know, exceeded 100,000 downloads. The show's doing really well, and it's all thanks to you. And I just so appreciate it. So thank you. And if you want to show us some love, help us out, you can always do that by subscribing, sharing, or rating the show in iTunes or your favorite podcast player, or just tell someone cool. Tell someone cool to tune in and listen. And I hope you will join me next time for another conversation with a woman at the forefront of fashion, entrepreneurship, sustainability, and tech. As you know, I call it Fest, and it's the future.